We are particularly excited about the counting towards Sinai as we're leading up to Shavuos. So I'm going to highlight that program before we get started. It is a daily 5 minute or less Midos development program, 6 different Midos across the weeks as we approach Shavuos. In addition to the audio recordings that each person can listen to individually, there is a Shabbos gathering component where you are provided with a source sheet, a packet, and you can therefore have the opportunity to take the learning that you did all week and really delve into and drill down on the nuances of the particular midah in an effort to assure that one's behavior, mindset is growth oriented as we approach Shavuos. So please sign up, ouwomen.org/CTS25. A really, really phenomenal program. We did Dunlakoff's Chus last week, and I have already tried to judge more people more favorably in an effort to be more prepared for Shavuos. So I strongly encourage you to participate. Orit, yes, is a packet sent through regular mail or only email? Email or WhatsApp. So join the email, join the WhatsApp, and like I said, we're really excited about this new element of a very popular and well-loved program. So thank you, Ayelet Shachar, for all your effort in this space. Thank you again all for being here. Chodesh Tov. And I'm going to hand the mic back to Emma.
Oh, hi. Welcome, everyone. Thank you, Robertson Schwimmen. And thank you for everyone for being here. I know whether it is the middle of your day, the end of your day. I know we're spanning some time zones here. If you could actually write in the chat where you are, where you're coming to us live from today, we would love to hear that and really see the breadth of communities across the world that are trying to think ahead and plan for a meaningful Shavuos. So thank you so much for taking the time to be here. We are really excited to have you here. I'm excited to introduce our presenters for today. We have Mrs. Elisheva Kamenetsky, Mrs. Rachel Kraus, and Rebbetzin Tzipora Pagrind. And we are here to discuss Shavuos programming that, as communities that are centered around Torah, Shavuos is obviously a highlight of our year, the time where we celebrate receiving the Torah. And often that experience is unique for women, whether it is our circumstances that dictate a different experience of Shavuos, or whether it is the way that women relate to Torah and relate to receiving the Torah that dictates a different type of programming. We are here today to welcome these three experts who will introduce themselves and where they program and what they do. But we're excited to welcome these three experts here today to discuss what Shavuot will look like in their communities and how that can influence how we will plan in our communities. So I'm going to turn over the mic to them. There will be a panel presentation for the beginning of the program. And then at the end, around the last 10 minutes, we will open up to questions. So if you have a question that you want answered and you don't want to forget it, you're welcome to put it in the chat, but we will get to all questions at the end just to keep it a little bit more streamlined because we want to keep it to a tight time frame around here. It's the middle of the day. Okay, so without further ado, I am going to turn over to our panelists, Mrs. Kamenetsky or Elisheva, if you would be able to introduce yourself and who do you usually program for? What is your role?
Absolutely. My name is Elisheva Kamenetsky, and I'm the head of school at SKA High School in Hewlett Bay Park, New York, one of the 5 towns. And I actually live in the community. Many of our students are from the immediate community. We do have some students who travel. It's about a 45-65% ratio as to who's traveling from outside of the community. But we are often looking and often are focused on not just what our students are doing during the school day, but how we can help them bring the values and the lessons that they're learning during the school day into their Shabbos and Yontif experience. So it has been part of the mission of the school since the very beginning to think about what are high school girls doing on a Purim night? What are high schools doing on a Simchas Torah? What are they doing on a Shavuos night? So it's a little bit of an unusual dynamic in the sense that I don't represent a shul, but it is an extremely community-centric school that, you know, in all of its mission, kind of has the tentacles of times outside of school as well.
Okay, thank you. Rachel, would you like to introduce yourself and where you are?
Yes, absolutely. So Chodesh Tov, everyone, and it's such a privilege to be here. And a huge shout out and thank you to the OU and to the OU Women's Initiative for creating opportunities for women to come together and learn together and with and from each other. So thank you. Thank you for all that you do. So I am based out of Kehilat Jeshurun on the Upper East Side in Manhattan. It's a shul that's about 1,300 family units, about 3,500 people. So it spans a very, very broad spectrum in terms of like really from birth to, you know, cradle to grave, as we say, as they say. And then also demographically and in terms of needs and different levels of education, it varies in a very pronounced way. It's also an affiliate of the synagogue affiliate of Ramaz, which is the school. So we have the opportunity to both program within the shul itself, and then by extension, kind of cascade into the broader community. So it's quite a large community. And I'm one of the clergy members or the, you know, staff members there. There are five rabbis and me. And I primarily focus on those that have not had a formal Jewish education. So that's like one subpopulation of women that goes across the board for the whole year. And specific Shavuot programming hinges around those categories as well. So kind of thinking those that have not had a formal Jewish education, women, and then broader for, you know, shiurim for the broader community.
Excellent. Thank you. And Sipora, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, thank you so much for having me and working with our time schedule here, 6 hours ahead. So my name is Sipor Pogren. I came to South Africa in 2010 with my husband on just like an actual mission to come and serve the Johannesburg Jewish community, which is a vibrant community outside of the diaspora community. And basically I got involved just because there was a need for a Rebbetzin to build cohesion, connection, and I came into an already very full population. Like it's the gamut. I would say it's like one of the centers or it's a map of Jewish life in Johannesburg. So you have about 300 plus core communities, and then it extends to be like a service to the greater Johannesburg community. So you have tons of minyanim. You have a women's learning center, which I'm the community director of, and I work with an educational director, where you get women from every kind of religious background coming in, both teaching and, you know, well, we have teachers from all over the Johannesburg community and women coming from all walks of Jewish life. And then my primary role was to really focus on women and children and giving them a sense of connection. Because outside of the home, your shul, especially in a place like Johannesburg or anywhere, the shul is an extension of home. So it's creating that sense of belonging, that community building, a space outside of the home where people feel connected and inspired. And so I will do everything and anything. I'm like that typical Rebbetzin that gets involved with everything because of either my curiosity, my enthusiasm, or my stupidity. I just get involved in everything. But my passion is women and youth programming. So yeah, so we'll talk about that.
Okay, excellent. Okay, so we now know that we have a very diverse group of presenters here today that are not all focused on one age, one stage, one type of population, but we're really spanning the breadth of women in our community. And that's really important because sometimes we'll hear a presenter talk about something and we say, but we don't have those people in our community. But here it's really speaking to everyone. And there's something that we can pull from each experience that will likely apply within your community. So I'm really excited about that diversity that we have here tonight. Let me just check. I see that Rachel. Oh, here we are. Let me just spotlight you.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah,
here you go. No problem.
Okay. All good.
So get you back on the spotlight.
Great.
So we're talking about Shavuos programming here today, but my first question is, when does your thought process begin? When does the process of planning for Shavuot begin? When and where does it start? Do you think of a theme? Do you begin with some other element of the programming? So when and where does your Shavuos programming begin? So Rachel, do you want to start us off?
Sure. So I would say that thank God for the cycles of Chagim, your microcycles of Rosh Chodesh, like we're full of cycles and microcycles. So I would say that the official is really after Pesach. For sure. I think, you know, Sefirot HaOmer kind of gives us the breath and our count up towards Shavuot. But because of just the nature and size of our community and the various needs, it really doesn't start till after Pesach. And that's when we come together formally as a group and as a team, the rabbis, me, that some of the other educational staff, thinking about thematics, thinking about different constituents in the community, thinking about cross collaboration with other shuls in the community and the goals that we have for Shavuot. So that really kicks in post-Pesach.
Okay. And where do you start your thinking? Do you start with an idea of this is what we want to talk about this year? Does it start with the circumstances in the community, in the world? Like what's your first...
Yeah, I would say there's definitely, I would say, a healthy balance of inyani d'yoma. So like just the kind of just the sensation and not being tone deaf to what's happening in and around the world. And at the same time, also not being too restricted or paralyzed by that either. And thinking about the unique nature and the makeup of our community and what will help push the envelope on people's spiritual growth, on their connection to Yahadut and to Yiddishkeit, to think about, the various needs that are specifically and uniquely related to our community. So I would say it's a healthy hybrid of understanding that, the long-term vision of what the shul is and what the community is, coupled with kind of a Inyanei Diyoma new cycle and thinking through the lens of how we're connecting that into the broader world.
Okay, excellent. And Tzipora, where do you start? When do you start?
Definitely like Rachel, like it starts the day after Pesach in my head. I feel everybody who's in programming or women's things, like you can never really be in the moment. Like mindfulness is a very important thing for a Rebbetzin or a community leader, because when you're on Pesach, everybody's on Pesach and I'm thinking like Ba'omer. So, you know, in a sense, you have to plan that program the day after Shavuos. You have to plan the next Shavuos the day after, because it's seeing, and that gets into what worked. What were we missing? That speaker didn't speak to those women? You know, where were the teenagers? Why didn't they come? What food did we have? We didn't have enough food. So I think the real planning comes the day after. And then the tachlis planning, like Rachel said, comes, you know, the week after Pesach. And that's me. I'm the one starting the fire. Okay, calling together. Right, let's get Jackie and let's get the rabbis in. Let's sit around the table and let's say, okay, did you call the teenager program? Because we want them all here at Tikkun Leil. Like it's, and then you really get into action plan. Like Tuesday, we have our in action plan. So yeah, that's how it goes.
All right, excellent. And Elisheva, where do you start? When does it begin when you're looking at it? Because also schools, you're gearing up for a very busy time now.
Yeah, so on a technical level, I do have to say that we, you know, as I mentioned, part of our school's mission is this kind of programming. We have a very broad team of people working on programming and a very talented team. So this isn't something that any one person does. I think the brass tacks conversations start also. They began last week, right after Pesach. But I'll say that we begin with the end in mind, meaning we ask ourselves, what's our goal? And our goal is to try to provide, and I'm not sure I made this clear enough in the intro, we really turned into more than just a school program, but really a community program. So our goal is to be able to provide shiurim and a place for women to gather and learn. Thank God we, over the last 4 or 5 years, we have created a template for our program that attracts upwards of 400 women. On Shavuos night. When I say women, they include high school girls, they include our alumni, our mothers, and other, it's open to all really women of the community. And so when we're planning, you know, we begin with the end in mind. What is going to attract each of those constituents, as Tzipora mentioned as well? And honestly, who is going to attract them? We, you know, I know that some shuls more typically run with a theme through the night. We do that in a super loose way. We actually offer 3 options in every time slot for that number of people. So we'll call it, you know, Stories for the Soul or Timeless Traditions might be a particular track through the night, but they're very loose kind of themes, because honestly, what matters much more is that the topic that's being spoken about and the person who's speaking is going to attract that constituency. So each of those tracks, so to say, are geared to, in a very loose way, towards a constituency. One track is more scholarly. One track is perhaps more a story of inspiration from a Gioras or a Balas Tshuva that easily ties into, but it's more story-like. And the other is perhaps a Torah shir with a source sheet, but geared towards 10th and 11th graders, a little less scholarly topic, maybe a topic of midos. And what's interesting is that we found that, you know, that also helps people, because a person could define themselves as more scholarly, but at 2 a.m, they might not mind or be self-aware enough to realize that listening to someone's life story might be the inspiration that they need in that particular zone. So again, when you ask the question of where do we begin with the end in mind. What is the goal? It's to attract all of these different constituents in a way that feels like such a thriving, pulsating, space for women to gather in our community.
Yeah, wow, that's a huge number of people, but it's also a huge number of people to think about. Like, it's not like you have 400 high schoolers.
Yeah.
You have.
Yeah. Yeah. I will just add one other thing that we're particularly sensitive to. I mentioned before that we are not entirely a community high school, meaning people come from outside of the community. We actually run a smaller version in 4 satellite communities, Queens, Great Neck, Brooklyn, and West Hempstead, because we don't want our students or people connected to our school and our school community to feel like they can't access it. So a smaller version is actually run in 4 other communities.
Wow, that's a huge, huge undertaking. That's tremendous. Okay, so we said that's where we begin. We begin with this very broad, and now let's try to make it more practical. So you said we're speaking to what the people want to hear, but on a practical level, what are the components that are the most essential to making your Shavuos programming successful? So what in the past have you found really works? Are there specific notes about the structure, the timing, the location, the format, the content, things that you found really have made what you do successful in the way that it is successful? So Tzipora, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, sure. Because I think why I've had a lot of success in the program is because I am so practical. Like, I actually start with the practical. So take, it's winter. Tikkun Leil, winter in dark Johannesburg. How are you getting 400 women to, well, how are they going to come out? And also you've got safety and you've got kids and you've got different programs. And so I love the idea of kicking off with like a communal dinner. And you're getting 300 people, which we've been successful at, and you get them in. And we haven't done it before, or we'd start early, or we had the most attractive speaker from wherever. But this year, I'm not going. I'm like, this year, people are feeling that much more cold. It happens to be a cold snap coming. We are having a dinner. That's practical step number one. You know, like, and then from there, we're building it. And don't have the teenage girls do the program there and then meet us there. Use the learning center. Like, I'm putting my foot down. You can see I'm getting a little passionate, because I'm like, it's not going to work if you put them there. And the atmosphere. What's the avira like if the teenagers only come at 12 o'clock after their program, instead of everybody's on the campus? We have a large campus. It can house easily and sneezily and everything. The boys over there, the girls over there, help me convince everybody tomorrow. And, you know, let's work it out. And that avira is pumping and that bri is going. You know, all those little practices to keep them going is massive. I spend a lot of time with that. So that's what I say. From practical and relevance, attractive. And it has to be variety. I like what Eliyahu said. It's not everybody's going to want that inspiring story. You know how many times, you know, oh, it was so empty. I really wanted a lamb to share. You know, you, in a community like this, you're going to get all of that. You're going to get, it's not Torahic enough, but it's too inspiring. So you offer a buffet. But I always find like the women's breakfast will attract 300 plus women and 100 kids on campus that morning, the first day enter. It's got to be something touching and emotional. So what's relevant to women? Meaningful, but, you know, and you're thinking about all those different components.
Wait, I want to pick up on that for a moment. So you've now mentioned 2 different parts. You have the Tikkun Leil and you also have the women's breakfast. Can you explain what that
looks like? I can go through the whole program, but I'll send it on the group. Yeah, there's the tea, there's the dinner to start. There's the power speaker that brings everybody together. I'll go really quickly. Then everybody branches off. So everybody, so that post-SEM girl has her program. She feels special with her relevant speaker. And they're in that room. And then we all come together for that powerful story that Rachel's going to tell in the middle of the night, because we want to be mothers and daughters together, which I find very valuable because I'm holistic here. I'm dealing with families, I'm holding a family space like I think everybody here is. And then I wanted the primary school girls to come. So I made Moms and Maidos. So I have a library set up because some kids want to come, right? You're a community school. Where are those grade threes, fours, whatever? Where are they going? Okay, the mommy with the baby, she's not going to come. Or maybe she got a babysitter. I don't know. Things work out here differently. We have help here. But you got to have a primary school boys program, girls program. We're separate here. So it's a, and doing that, then the mommy comes because, wow, you've serviced Abigail in grade three with a library and yummy nosh bar. You see, and then it goes the whole night and the teenagers come. And then in the morning we reconvene. It's always in Johannesburg. It's a big, everybody does a big breakfast. And because this is the center of Jewish life, North America being one of the big communities, you can have 300 plus and then you got to cater. Why? Before they didn't have a women's program when I came 15 years ago. Sorry, there wasn't a children's program when you were having a women's breakfast. So you get 100 women. Now you put in the best children's program during your women's breakfast at the same time with food, with supervision. Think about all those things because we're getting really practical idea lab here. Then it works. Then you're going to get people. And the teenagers, you got to make it fun and you got to ask them and you got to personalize it and you got to say, you come too with your mom and you can have the sweet table. I mean, all these little things. I hope I'm not rambling, but see, I'm in it right now. So you've got me.
No, that's really excellent. Like to say that like you need to, practical doesn't always mean that everyone's going to fit in the same room at the same time. Like practical means that there's so many components that can reach each different person. Because if you're trying to fit everyone in, it's not going to work for everybody.
Right. But and then you delegate. I can't do everything. So you get Tova to do the girls. We coordinate and but I love bringing everyone together at certain points. That kickoff shiur, that communal dinner, that meaningful breakfast. I want my teenagers with their mothers. And I tell the teenage program, if you want to do a breakfast, that goes into it. But I believe mothers and daughters together for a big breakfast with an inspiring, amazing speaker. Don't miss Rachel Wack. She's amazing. Don't miss her. She's a totally attractive, relevant, chaya, cool. Everybody must enjoy and participate. You want to have a girl teenage breakfast at somebody's, do it second day, Anta. We're lucky. We have a second day. But you have to think about that and you have to plan it now. Otherwise, oh, you miss it. And that's a big thing with big organizations. Oh, but I planned. And then you miss these things. But now we're having a separate dinner. But it would have been so nice to be together. That's a big one. That's a big impractical. Think ahead and plan. So I called everybody this week instead of 2 weeks before. And I said, no, we've already planned a dinner. No. Even other communities. Do you want to join together? Because I'm big on Achdus. Get to that. You want to join together and make it even better? Theme of the day.
Okay, Elisheva, what are the practical pieces that make it successful?
So I think actually one of the most practical things that we did from the onset was actually the timing. The reality is that if we want to be attracting women of different ages, many of them do need to be up in the morning with their children. Many of them need to be home to put people to bed who are, you know, that we don't run a middle school program. So their kids, they just finished their suda and they have to, you know, clean up and do that. So we actually do two things with the timing that I think are both a drop unusual, one a little more than the other, but I think really in the name of practicality for everybody. The first is that we start on the earlier end for women. Many shuls programs for women will start at 12. We actually start at 11:30. Again, depending on the zman, sometimes 11:45. The logic there is that if a woman wants to chapashir, she's dressed already, she was at her yontif table, and she wants to go out to a shir and come home to be with her family and children who are sleeping, and her husband's now going to go out. He can go out at 12 or 12:15 and still have a full tikkun leil, but she could at least chap a shir. We do have a large percentage that stay for the entire program, but we also encourage a nechnas v'yotze, come for what works for you and how it works for you. So I think that early start has a practicality for people to be able to get a taste. You don't And I think this is going to get to my second point. I don't believe strongly in people, women or men, honestly, staying up all night at the expense of their ability to learn or daven during the day. And I actually speak about that in school to our students, that's not necessarily the goal here. This is not a slumber party. This isn't about watching the sunrise. It's not even about being up at midnight to watch the Aseret HaDibros and the lightning in the sky or whatever, you know, things that young people can sometimes carry with them as being what Tikkun Leil Shavuos is all about. It's about going the extra mile for Talmud Torah on Shavuos to show your commitment to Kabbalah's HaTorah. So whatever that looks like, I want to make that accessible. And therefore, we also end our program at about 2:30 a.m. Because I find very much so that there are diminishing returns, honestly, for myself, for anybody. I do go home at that point. And I, you know, it's clear that I am. I did this as a young mother and a young mechanechet. And I did have to wake up at 6:37. I had their sugar cereals out already for them, and they ate breakfast and didn't wake mommy and got an extra treat if I slept a little longer. And I had my play date with my neighbor, and we did what all women do on that morning, you know, to kind of shift off in some way. But at the end of the day, I do believe that's practical. And I don't believe a tremendous amount of Talmud Torah and Harbatzas HaTorah happens in the wee hours of the morning. Frankly, I think a lot less davening happens when people daven Vasikin have been up all night, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's an important message to transmit, but it also allows us to keep our program tight. When we create the program, there are no fillers. Every presentation is lechatchila for the slot that it has been created for. It's hard to program 6 hours of programming. I much prefer a tight program where each thing is bim, bam, boom, you know, and we end at 2:30, but kavod. It's not weird. It's not strange. Practically, we do arrange walking groups for people, you know, going to different areas so that people can feel safe walking at home. Some of the teenage girls are very motivated and would like to continue learning. So we ask one girl to open up her home. I will be very honest with you, of the 400 attendees from 11:30 to 2:30, there is rarely more than 30 girls there. They get the message, they understand, and they get permission to not stay up all night, which I think is important, particularly in a teenage culture where in our New York modern Orthodox community, this night has turned into a night of socialization, of vices, of all sorts of things that it's not. And I guess that leads me to the last thing, which was pretty unusual when we started, but I couldn't be prouder of it, honestly. Maybe it's the thing my colleagues tell me that this is the thing I'm most proud of with our program. Our food is beyond simple. Water bottles and cut up fruit cups. Nothing else. The ad and the flyer says nothing about sushi, about omelet stations, about anything else. It is clear from the get-go that this you're coming to enjoy and revel in the beauty of Torah. And there's no real frills. The flyer's appealing. Like I said, the speakers are appealing. But with that also, and the tight running, it runs very tightly. There's 5 minutes passing time between each thing. Again, if you need a break, we have a Beit Midrash room also that's open with people leading smaller chaburas. And we have this track of lighter things. But the break is not in socializing. It's not a kiddush. That's not what this night is about. And we accomplish that in the timing and the way it's structured.
Right. Yeah, because I think it's true. If you look at a full schedule that has 7 breaks for food, that's really what you're spending the extra time until the wee hours of the morning. Whereas if you condense it, like you're not cutting out the learning to have people go home earlier necessarily.
I'm actually surprised by how many adult women stay till 2:30, but I think it's because, again, some stay till 1:30, some stay till 12:30, but you create something that's manageable, that, you know, that's somewhat functional, maybe with a nap the next day, but, you know, is certainly more functional than the suggestion that you're going to be up on.
Sipora, did you want to add something? And then we'll jump to you.
You're doing much better than me because I didn't mean to think we don't go all night. As women in girls program, I end at 1. I'm lucky to get them to stay there till 1 a.m. You know, I'm pushing for maybe 1:30. The teenage girls will want a little bit later, but it's just much quieter here. And we also start early because Shabbos candlelighting is like 5:25, right? So you can imagine your dinner is 6:30 and you can call people in for 9 p.m. starting. But it's just interesting. I totally agree. It's not the right thing to say, the whole night for everyone. So.
Okay, and Rachel, what makes your program look like, and what makes it successful?
Yeah, I'm sure. And then many of the tricks and tips have been covered. So I would say that we're probably all playing a very similar playbook. Just to add to what's already been shared, number one, I think the role of the debrief is critical, which we do every year at the end of Shavuot, and look at what worked, what didn't, and how we can improve for the following year. So that when you get to the following year, you can look back at your notes and remember what didn't work and what you committed to in real time at that, you know, at that closing out of Shavuot, with what to do to improve on the following year. So I think the art of the debrief is phenomenal and cannot be overstated. Like it's really critical. So that's number one. Number two is, and it's kind of been mentioned, but to explicitly state that Tikkun Leil is one portion of Shavuot. It is 48 hours just to think about the template and that utility, the different demographic needs, the different age groups, the different type of learning, panel discussions versus like frontal shiurim versus encouraging Beit Midrash learning. So to think about the different types of pedagogical approaches to Limud Torah and to be Osik Limud Torah and to stretch it over that 48 hours so that you can derive the ultimate optimal opportunity out of each demographic segment. So that's an incredibly important point also, just to think about not the role of Tikkun Leil, but the extension of the 48 hours. The other part is the cross-pollination. So and it really depends on the individual community and the individual makeup of that community. Again, for us, it's like a city in a city. So we're dealing with like size and scope and scale. So so in thinking about like how you take, they have a whole kind of program devoted to younger school age kids, ECC and like lower school, that come and give Divrei Torah, that automatically brings in the parents. Once you have the parents there, what are we providing? Like a magic show for the kids once they finish their Divrei Torah. You do that while you bring the parents in to do like parenting in Torah. So also to think about the curation of the Torah learning to be in sync with the day party, so to speak. So it's really important to think through that that lens as well.
Okay, and Rachel, a question specifically for you. I know you mentioned that you're catering to, like you're thinking specifically about women, but also individuals who have less of a background. Are there specific things that you have found to be successful in terms of somebody who's newer to Torah that have been appealing? Has it been using some of those alternate time slots? Has there been anything specific for that population?
Yes, I would say that. So specifically with that, on an ongoing basis, we have a beginner service every Shabbat. So there's already a built-in environment where people feel that if they have not had a formal Jewish education, whether they're new to Judaism or have a kid at Ramaz and the parent, you know, never had a formal Jewish education and they want to learn what their kids are learning, there's a portal of access and entry. And I would encourage all communities to do this because it is an assumption that even people that grew up in the system know what's happening on, you know, when it comes to tefillah and when it comes to Torah and when it comes to observance and when it comes to just general questions. There's this understanding that when you walk into a shul and people stand up or sit down or take three steps back, that they know what they're doing. Many do not, even if they grew up in a formal Jewish educational setting. So whether it's on a weekly basis, monthly basis, or quarterly, just to have some type of access point and portal of entry for those that have not, just to encourage, whether you've had a background or do not have a formal background, that there's a way, there's a place to enter, to ask your questions or just listen. So I think that as a template is critical for every community. So when it happens to be that for ours in particular, there's a need as well as addressing the opportunity and the need. So because there is an ongoing access point for that, we really use the lead up to Shavuot to encourage the thinking in advance, just like, you know, 30 days before you're supposed to start learning, you know, Divrei Halacha about the particular holiday. We use that also as a pitzchon peh for chinuch, for in the lead up to Shavuot, to talk about like the fact that we read Megillat Rut, and it talks about like, we should all live as Jews by choice. That is the imperative. And leaning into that when it comes to the preparation and the learning over Shavuot. In a very practical sense, those that have not had a formal Jewish educational background are not inferior academically and intellectually. So it's just a matter of providing English and Hebrew sources often and making sure that things are translated. That's also like a tip, you know, kind of a tip and trick of the trade, that you can still be giving the same shiur and just giving it a little bit more context or a little bit more explanation or a little bit more kind of texture and discovery around not just saying Rashi says this, but say who Rashi is and then continue to say it. but just to incorporate a little bit of that definition, because these are, you know, people who certainly are academically capable, intellectually capable, spiritually capable, and it's just a matter of not having a familiarity with the language. So I would say that that's something that we do. We spend a lot of time on, and not just for the beginners, call it beginners classes. It's really more broadly so that people feel a sense of comfort and don't have to feel ostracized if they're sitting in a class and might not know a particular reference point. So, and I think that it's a big learning for educators and for schools and for communities to think about even one person in a room who might feel marginalized about not understanding a term or a name, just to give it that 4 second reference point, just to ground the room and make everyone feel welcome.
Right. Excellent. Yeah. That it's thinking about who's in the room that often allows more people to join. I want to just jump off of that for 1 second. I guess, Rachel, you mentioned the idea of framing what's going to be done on Shavuot in terms of living as a Jew by choice, that this is what we are going to do. Are there any, and we'll start with you, Rachel, this time, is there anything that you do to encourage the general congregation, and to each of you, is there anything that you do beforehand specifically, aside from creating a flyer? Are there conversations that happen beforehand that really urge people to join, and sort of what do those look like? Are they communal conversations? Are they individual reaching out to people? What's the mechanism you use to bring people into the room? Once the program's established, how are you encouraging people to attend? So Rachel, do you want to start
with that? Great question. I'd say it's a combination. I would say doubling down on the asset that you have as a community and as a shul, in terms of your communication channels, whether that's email, WhatsApp, social media, encouraging conversations to happen, creating like vignette videos that we, you know, post on social or again, send out through whatever other communication channels, just to create kind of that sense, that stickiness factor and the buzziness around what is coming up. The same way, and kind of encourage this alongside any kind of cycle when it comes to the calendar, which is that the more you prepare, the more you get out of it. So you can show up on Tikkun Lel and attend a class, or if you think about the preparation or list of questions in advance, think about Cheshbon HaNefesh, about that particular holiday, the essence of the holiday, what's happening, what's the ikar of that holiday, and to think about that in advance, the more you'll extract and gain from that. So I would say we certainly double down on our traditional communication channels, social media, and otherwise to encourage conversation and participation. So even in the lead up, we'll have two or three women shiur room in advance of Shavuot. So, you know, again, similar to extending Tikkun Lel to the 48 hours, there's 365 days a year of Tikkun Lel, like Osek B'Limud Torah, and to feel in love with our Jewish identity and in love with Torah and learning is an ongoing thing. It's not limited to that one day. So creating that sense of exhilaration and excitement and connectivity and relationship is something that is it's pre, during, and post.
Excellent. And Tzipora, what do you do to bring the women to the room?
Yeah, just to piggyback off of what Rachel said. Rachel, all right? At the Learning Center right now, the whole theme, we're going into a new term because we just came out of Pesach. So the whole theme now, every teacher will have like a 3-part series on Megillas Ruth, or, you know, for the women and the community members. Obviously, that's going on around the then we're doing it in the newsletter with, you know, different halakhot this week, or we have a women's shiur right after davening. So it's going to be themed leading up. The posters are going out. Now, the thing with a poster, and this is my biggest recommendation, when you send out a poster, it's so impersonal. Now, how many posters do we get a day? 25? I don't know. It's too much. When I send out any poster, even if it's to my, you know, Mass 500 group, you know, the women's group of the WhatsApp, it has to be with a personal message. Hope to see everybody there. Call me if you want to get involved. Like, it starts with that. And people know me. Like, I'm the annoying WhatsApp person because I'm reminding, sending another personal message. And then really, and this is a credit, Rabbi Shmuel Mothman, who started with the math with Rabbi Shane and Rabbi Alba in the 1980s here and built this amazing community of which I'm a part of now. It's picking up that phone. You want somebody at your breakfast who's a little bit shy or who comes from another community but doesn't really have it, or whatever. You want them to feel that phone call. Nothing could take away a personal phone call. And if you can't do the phone call, so it's a personal message to dear Elisheva. I really think you'll enjoy Tikkun Lel this year. I would love to speak to you about the community protection service, the meeting. It will make it easy for you to come. Do you want to come to my dinner beforehand? I'll put you at a table with your whatever it is. That's a little bit much of an ask. But you can do that to 50 people. You don't have to do it to 500 people. And I feel like those things that really, and people have said, I came because you nudged me, Sipora, you know? So the personalization is massive. And then again, the collaboration. I'm only getting now, like I said, I want to create that atmosphere, that vibrant atmosphere to kick off Tikkun Leil. And I'm only doing it because I'm working with other programs that say, use Ursa Math this year. Let's be together. Let's generate something. So that collaboration to others. And that brings in participation. It brings a whole nother thing because they could do something, but it's diluted on their own. Be part of something bigger. Let's think ahead. So it's the collaboration, connection with others, and then that personalization. I cannot emphasize on that. It's like magic.
Okay, and Elisheva, how do you message that this is the place to be on Shavuos night?
So the first is with the array of options. That choice works in our favor here as well. So our flyer, when it goes out, it's not just like, it doesn't just say, come learn Torah with SKA. It has the grid of, it's 12 shiurim are going to take place over the night, 4 slots from 11:30 to 2:30, and 3 options in each slot. One of the most gratifying things has been a number of families will tell me that the Shabbos before, we usually send it out, we try to send it out just before the Shabbos before Shavuos, obviously depending on the calendar and how many days that is, because we don't want it to get too lost, that, you know, we spend Shabbos afternoon, I and my girls, plotting our plan. We're going to go to this first, and then this first, and then this first. It creates interest, and it creates conversation. And the same thing's true in our school, where we do a little more promoting among our students, obviously. We make announcements about it. Teachers who are giving the shiurim speak about it. And we do educate about what Tikkun Leil is and isn't to that population. I do find, and I don't, you know, I'm not one to sit on my laurels, and I know that you always have to be fueling the engine, but thank God we've run a successful program for many, many years, and it's Goreres. It has a reputation. And I think it also has a reputation because honestly, many shuls struggle to create women's programming on their own. And this was very important to me when we opened this up a little bit wider. It actually started, I was a 12th grade mechanechet, and I did it for my own 12th grade students. I thought it was like an amazing end of high school event in my home. I also had a dinner for them in my home. They ate the suza with us. And then everything, all the learning and everything took place there in a much more intimate way. I think back to those days and it's very different, but actually really the same mission in that way. But when we went larger and I was considering inviting the communities, I actually remember I'm not a shul, I'm a school. I was sensitive to not overshadowing the schools and the shuls. So I called, you know, the main, at that time, there were fewer than there are now in the Woodmere area. But I called the main shul rabbis and I said, what do you think of this idea? And I was not expecting, I was hoping they would give me permission. I was not expecting the bless you if this works. You know, you help us. And one of the treks, so to say, are actually communal rabbis from different shuls who come and speak at our program. And they bring their, you know, their women will sometimes follow, but certainly there's a collaboration, a beautiful sense of achdus in the community in a subtle way that is, you know, it's not necessarily the theme of the night, but is represented by different shul rabbis presenting there. But at the end of the day, they each and every one of them say, wow, you know, look what's been created, a real makom for women that any one of us on our own would struggle to create. They were excited for this outside resource to kind of bring everybody together. But that's also part of the way that it gets publicized. It's a community event, and it's there for the community. It's L'Shem El Tiferes for sure, our school, and the speakers. But at the end of the day, we never, ever, you know, you don't need a calling card to come in. We are part of a community. We benefit from our greater community, and we're so happy to give back to it.
Excellent. That's really amazing that like it really, yeah, it, no one shul that I can think of would be able to create such a robust.
Even space-wise, it's not, you have too many constituents. I mean, unless you are a very, you have a camp. I mean, this is what Sipora is describing is gorgeous. I don't know if I can leave for Shavuos, but I would love to go to Johannesburg to see your program. But you would have to have a campus. You know, you don't, it's not Shaiach. So this way I don't think anybody thinks of it as outsourcing, but, and remember, we are literally, this program runs in our elementary school, which is 4 blocks away from the Young Israel of Woodmere, the largest Young Israel in North America, to my knowledge. You know, so we're in a central location that allows that. That's also a very practical piece, I think, that's very, very important.
And just to add on to that, one of the things that we do also is that when we think about the role of a shul and the role of a community are two different things, and very often be a possessiveness around like, this is what we're doing. So just to open up those portals also and create like, Manhattan's a little bit different than other places, just given the density of the population, but we partner with other shuls, with Chabad and with the other Orthodox shuls in the area, and sometimes even the non-Orthodox shuls, and invite people in. And we'll do panels with like the past, you know, 6 or 7 years, we've done Second Day Chag, Torat Nashim. So a woman from every one of those institutions, from Chabad, from Altnoy, from Park East, from some of the other shuls, and we all teach together. We each do like 10-minute, 12-minute vignettes, and we invite the whole community together. So it's not about which shul you belong to, what member you belong to. It's just a place where everybody can come together, and with the Sephardim also. So I don't know how many people have a large Sephardic contingency, huge and so important to also be like inclusive, because davening is already separate, food is clearly separate. So this is also a way to bring the community, the broader community together. But again, each community is going to be different, but we found that that was very helpful to think about the cross-pollination, not of membership, but of true community.
Right, I love that. And just on that note, I want to add an OU Women's Initiative program that we are going to be running this year, pre-Shavuot. We're calling it Ke'isha Achat. Like, we all know that we received the Torah when we were Ke'isha Achat B'Lev Achat. So this is our play on it, Ke'isha Achat, that when we are all together, like one woman, that's when we can receive the Torah. So the idea of the program is you will sign up your community and choose a day, a night to gather pre-Shavuot. You could essentially do it on Shavuot as well. We will be sending you an inspirational video to start off your program, a sign-up sheet, and each woman who attends the program claims one parsha, and you learn the entire Torah together in 1 hour at your program. So you come, you show the video, you learn your parsha. There's a real cool Torah. I've run this program previously, and it was awesome. You hear every woman learning at their level. They can learn in Hebrew, English, with a friend, on their own, as a mini group. And when everyone finishes, you make that siyum together and you celebrate. So going into Shavuos, there's this feeling of actively accepting the Torah. So you will see the information going out about that in the next few days. Sign up your community. It's a great way to lead into Shavuos. And we really hope that everyone will participate. And I think it really helps to bring in a lot of these themes that you've mentioned, of creating that achdus, of opening up the channels, of this is a process of accepting the Torah, not just show up on Shavuot and be ready for all night of learning. It's building up to that. And we really hope that all of the communities represented here will participate. So last question, we're going to do a speed round and then we'll open up to open questions. If you could share one practical tip, what is something that you are thinking about right now? We can't forget to do this for our program. What is that one thing? So starting with Sipora, what can we not forget to do? What's that thing that's on your mind?
Get heaters. It's cold. If you want people to stay, get heaters. Make sure we have heaters. And make phone calls. Make sure everybody was called to include. And on the theme that you guys were just talking about it. Call people and say, is this work for you? If it doesn't, that's cool. I'm okay with that. But can I help you? That's my, we're here together. We're here to work together. L'shem Shemai.
Elisheva, what is the practical thing? Don't forget to do this to make your program successful.
Get sponsors. Ein kemach, ein Torah. You can get better people. And you can draw people in from the community. I'm awed at the people who year after year are sponsoring our program, whose daughters have graduated many years. It keeps people connected. And we give them the option, obviously, in memory of somebody, in honor of somebody. That itself creates community. But of course, the funds that it generates allows us to really attract top speakers and for them to feel like they're part of something very special in a way that's Bakavadik.
Amazing. And Rachel, what should we not forget?
Yeah, not forget. It's a bit of a hybrid and not specifically related to Shavuot. to think about in the last like 6 months, who has lost someone, who is has been in Shiva or in mourning, and to make sure you reach out and invite them. Because especially around moments of gathering, big gatherings, that's where a lot of trepidation comes in. People kind of re-emerging from their own mourning into public settings, public spheres. Any of the holidays is important, I would say, but that's to think about the one phone call, two phone calls, but the people who have been somewhat maybe emotionally marginalized because of a family trauma or a family loss, and to think about them and make sure that they feel included and wanted at those moments.
Wow, that's so important. I had a moment before on a major communal event also where I sent someone the flyer forgetting that they were in Avilas, and she said, oh, do you know if I'm allowed to come? And I was like, oh, that's such an important point. So just to clarify that for people, like, can not only make them feel like you remember them, but even practically, like, they don't know what their standing always is. Okay, excellent. So now I see we've had a lot going on in the chat, but if anyone has specific questions, let me just quickly scan the chat. So many amazing ideas. I definitely would like to direct everyone to read through the chat. There's some great ideas going on there.
I have a question.
Okay, yes.
Okay. First of all, thank you to all the panelists. It was very, very, very interesting. Elisheva, I don't know if you remember me, Dina Green. It's been a very, very long time from Fairlawn. Anyway, my question is, I live in Livingston. We are a small shul. We have about 200 families. And I would say the stickiness factor that Rachel spoke about earlier is our biggest community challenge, not just for women's programming, but in general. And I guess my question is, you all have very large constituents that you're working with, and Halavai, we should be so fortunate. So my question is, what recommendations would you have for a shul where I would say getting people to come to learning programs, which is a big passion of mine, is a challenge. So whether focusing stuff, we've done a SEAM for many years. I grew up in Fairlawn, which is a very, very active community. So just any ideas you have for, let's talk about the women in particular, but just in terms of getting them to even show up when you're not dealing with critical mass. And I took a lot of notes about the suggestions. I like the short programming, the early, like that's all great, but just I'm not working with a strong base. Every time I try to get programming going in terms of getting active participation, the numbers are small. So that's my question to you, all of you.
I love Tzipora's the way she designs it with the dinner. And, you know, when I was working with a smaller base of high school kids originally, as I described previously, and was trying to get it off the ground, I did a similar thing. And I think that, you know, one of the things that you can do is that over dinner, you can create some more informal conversation around Torah learning at the tables. Not everything has to be a speaker. So you can have conversation cards or, different things and you know, have an MC at the dinner to kind of shout out, you know, this ethical dilemma, what would you think? Or what would be your suggestion in this kind of way? And to kind of use that momentum to kind of, you know, move the community towards the concept of we can gather together around Torah and around ideas. You know, if immediately after the dinner, and again, it's not a babysitting time on Eastern Standard Time, you know, after the Suda, but there was this suggestion of women stay, husbands take kids home, come back an hour later. I don't know if that would work in your shul, but I think something like that could be an extra, but maybe that's something that you first do a year or two later after the Torah dinner that kind of just starts to warm people up with some more informal conversation. Not everything needs to be a presentation and a shiur. There are so many things. I mean, Rabbi, you know, everybody working with Rabbi Sachs Torah is putting out so many great table conversation stuff. There's lots of stuff, ideas online. I'm sure the OU Women's Initiative has, and the OU in general has a lot of things like that. I just think that maybe something like that would be a soft start that could kind of set that tone.
Yeah, I would say to add to that is not be afraid to go off site, like have in someone's living room, like have somebody invite, you know, get a couple of different, you know, deputize a couple of different women, invite people together. Also being, again, like demographically sensitive, like, you know, women with young kids are going to have different learning needs and different social needs than the ones that are, you know, have kids that are in college. So just to be conscious of that, but not to be afraid to take it out of the shul and to get into people's homes.
Yeah, we do so, we do something second afternoon like that in someone's house. So, yeah, thank you.
One of the biggest generators to get people involved when you have, I mean, it could be 300 families and everybody can be apathetic as well, or shy or whatever it is. It doesn't have to be just a small community. People have been a variety of reasons why they don't get involved. And sometimes it just takes, it's like donor or doer. There's donors and that's their involvement. And then they're invested. It's like involvement is investment. And you want to, one of the things that I tried, like 10, one of the first projects was called The Power of One. It's a very good project. It starts with getting everybody to take on one thing for your community. And them doing one thing, like the Kiddush duty, or I'm going to host a shiur for whatever. What's your power of one thing? I mean, that's a whole campaign that just is a strategy, but it's that concept of involvement is investment. And I feel, and I really am, as much as I am very practical and I like to, you know, make sure and manage, I'm very cool with like, you like flowers that way? You want to do the flowers this year, Tracy? Right. You know, and now Tracy's involved. Getting people involved is getting their investment. And don't try to do everything. Rather say, do you like to host that? Or do whatever it is, that's a massive thing. And it's probably, oh, well, I saw that Shelley did that. Maybe I can do, I'm really good at, I don't know, people have the craziest talents. We're sitting on massive talent in these communities, and it's just pinpointing it. So whether it's a campaign of Power of One or asking them, can you set up the supper? Because you really, yeah, that's the idea.
Thank you all.
Okay, excellent. And we have time for one quick question, if anyone has one last question. Okay, if not, then we are going to sign off for now. Again, there are great ideas in the chat. I will try to gather those together. Thank you, Orit, specifically for sharing a lot of really great ideas in the chat. I'm going to try to compile some of those in the follow-up email with the recording that will go out in a few days from now. I'll try to share some of those ideas there as well. So thank you so much to our panelists. I know I learned a lot. I really appreciate you taking your time to share with us today. And thank you, everyone, for joining.